Welcome to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, a show exploring how herbs heal as medicine, as food, and through nature connection. I'm your host, Rosalie de la Forêt. I'm an herbalist teacher and the best-selling author of the books Alchemy of Herbs and Wild Remedies. I created this podcast to share trusted herbal wisdom so that you can get the best results when relying on herbs for your health. I love offering up practical knowledge to help you dive deeper into the world of medicinal plants and seasonal living. My goal is that you'll walk away from each episode feeling inspired to start working with herbs in your everyday life. Each episode of the podcast is available on my Herbs with Rosalie YouTube channel, as well as your favorite podcast app. Transcripts and recipes for each episode can be found at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com. To get the latest news as well as fun bonuses, be sure to sign up for my weekly herbal newsletter. Okay, grab your cup of tea. Let's dive in. I've spent many hours poring over Thomas Avery Grand's Materia Medica books. In fact, his first book was one of the first herbal books that I bought when I started studying Chinese medicine. And you're going to see in this episode, this guy obviously loves plants and has wonderful insights into them, whether it's their indications or energetic profiles. So there's lots to learn here. For whatever reason, I will say that I was surprised when Thomas chose motherwort as his plant for the interview. I don't know why. I just didn't see it coming. But as I mentioned that in the episode to him, and I was really surprised to hear his response and just how much he loves motherwort. For those of you who don't already know him, Thomas Avery Grand has been studying plant medicine for over 30 years. He's lived in China for many years, and he received his PhD in Materia Medica Studies and Plant Pharmacy at the China Academy of Chinese Medical Sciences in Beijing. He's the first non-Chinese recipient of that degree. Pretty cool. His master's degree is in traditional Oriental medicine, and he has a certificate in herbal medicine from the American School of Herbalism. Dr. Grand is the author of two books on the use of Western herbs in Chinese medicine and is the translator of the first book on growing and processing Daodi Chinese herbs and the first men's health book published in Chinese medicine from the mid-17th century. He's also the co-translator of a publication on the initial response to the COVID outbreak by the Chinese medicine community in China. Thomas is the executive director of the East-West School of Herbology and president of Herb Whisper, Inc., which focuses on agriculture of medicinal plants and education. He now resides in Western Massachusetts, where he and his wife are building an herbal sanctuary and educational center. Well, welcome to the podcast, Thomas.
Thank you, Rosalie. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, we always start off with hearing, you know, how you got started on your plant path and, you know, what kind of brought you here to us today. And I'm excited to hear your story because in some ways I feel like I know you so well because I've been reading your books for years. You were a teacher when I was at East West. So, you know, that was at least 15 years ago, but I haven't actually heard a lot of your story. So I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, thanks. I want to thank you first for having me. And I mean, the reason I'm here probably is because of East West, I guess, in some ways, because otherwise I'd just be this other herbalist out there that you maybe have heard of or something. And it's really exciting to see what you've done in herbal medicine, you know, over the years. I think it's been longer than 15 years, but we won't count. And how I got into herbal medicine is a sort of a long and twisted path. I mean, I've always been interested in plants, and I grew up rurally gardening and so on. And then I had like a couple of partners, lovers, whatever, that were into herbal medicine, and sort of got turned on a little bit that way, but not really. You know, I had taken some classes and so on and so forth and read some books, but I was still like just dabbling, really. Still, you know, working a different job and so on. And I was invited to a class at UC Santa Cruz, and the teacher was Christopher Hobbs. And I was so blown away. It's the first time I had been to a class where someone seemed to have such a grasp on everything that he was talking about, and it was so well, like his thoughts and his ideas were so well developed, and his delivery was excellent, and I just was like, okay, I need more of this. And so at the end of the class, I went up and asked him, you know, is how can I get more? I think that was exactly my question. And he said, oh, Michael Tira and I have this school, and you know, you should come and check it out. And so I got a phone number from him. It was like a Friday evening or Thursday. I think it was a Friday evening class. I didn't know who Michael Tira was. This is like 1991, two or three, something like that. And so on Monday morning, I called the number and I asked two questions. How much and where do I send the check? I didn't ask any other question. I didn't ask anything about the school, the curriculum. I didn't know how many classes there were a week or a month. I had no idea. So obviously it was, you know, he made a pretty big impression on me. It was only later when I went to the initial sort of class where they, you know, they spoke and whatever, talking. I think they were trying to get more people to sign up or whatever. And that I saw Michael speak and him talking about Chinese medicine. And I was like, oh, I signed up for Chinese. What's Chinese medicine? So that's how it started. It
That's hilarious
was
because
really
that was the same for me. Like I signed up for East West and had no idea I was about to get a big chunk of Chinese medicine, which I
kind
ended
of
up loving, but it's kind of funny that that was like my similar experience. I was like, "Wait, what did I just sign up for?"
boring. All right. Well, you know, and I had studied martial arts for quite a few years at that point, and so I had some sense of, you know, certainly the very basics. It's not like we had classes on theory or anything like that, but there were, you know, stuff like yin and yang and the five phases were and qi were sort of discussed in these, you know, not very specific ways, but at least I had some concept of those things. But I had no idea what I was getting myself into for sure. Little did I know that, you know, 30 whatever years later, I'd be sitting here with books that are all in Chinese, you know, behind me and more over there and whatever that I depend on, you know, daily for my reading pleasure.
So, I went to East West and I feel like I got like, I'll call it like Chinese medicine light, right? Because you spend 4 years there, but I realize it's just like a very little piece of Chinese medicine. You did that. And then now, yeah, I mean, the books that you resource are not in English. That's a big difference there.
Right,
Like, how did
I actually
that
donated most of my English language Chinese medicine texts to a school that I used to teach at in Hawaii because I just realized I'm probably never going to really look at these. I didn't actually take the East-West course like you did. What I did was the American School of Herbalism, which was Christopher Hobbs, Michael Tiera, along with a host of other characters, including Leslie Tiera and Roy Upton and Holly Guzman and Bill Schoenbart and, you know, a number of other sort of, you know, the Santa Cruz group, basically. And though, you know, I'm fairly sure that Michael was more or less following the course structure through the class. I didn't actually formally take the course. However, I did digitize the course. I'm the guy that took what he typed, because when I first started apprenticing with Michael, his job that he gave me was to photocopy and bind the course, which was done in this little building on the back of it, like in the back of this garden. So I would go there a couple of days a week and photocopy the lessons and bind them up into the books. And then at some point, I think it was maybe 95 or something like that, 96, I'm not sure when, they decided they want to digitize it. And so he asked me if I would do it. And I think he paid me like some very, very small pittance. But I didn't own a computer, so I went out and bought a computer for more money with less power than, you know, probably your remote control on your TV has now, you know. And I typed every word of that entire course into the computer and to digitize it. So I guess I did take it in a way.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah.
And so you have two books on Western herbs, and and Chinese medicine. And I love those books. There's so much wonderful insights on those plants. And how did that come about that you, that you even got the idea, that you went for it?
Right, right. Well, I mean, again, I have to sort of blame Michael for this in a way. Of course, you know, he kind of started this trend with planetary herbology. And I studied with him for a bunch of years, not just in the school, but then I went on to do apprenticeship with him for my licensure for acupuncture for Chinese medicine in California. And so I was kind of surrounded by it all the time. And then I started teaching at the American School. And as I taught more and more, people started saying, you know, like, you should write this down, you should write a book and this and that. I was kind of like, nah, whatever. You know, it seems a little bit early in my career for that. But I started keeping really good notes. And I kept a binder in the clinic with me. And anytime I did anything that was different, I made a note about it. And over the course of however many years, I guess that first book was published in 2008, I think. So 10 or 12 years or something like that, that binder started to become a book, really. And so I finally decided to write it all down. That was the first one. And the second one is just a continuation of the material from the first. There's a little more explanation in the beginning. That one really is due for a rewrite, a second edition. I've started it. I just haven't had the time to finish it because I self-published that. I started this publication company called Passiflora Press, which means I did everything from start to finish. And now when I read it, I'm like, oh yeah, that could use a little editing. You know, it's fine. It reads fine, I think. And some people think it's great. They really love the style. But it's time for a rewrite.
I would welcome that. But I'm one who has loved the books, and they're very plant centric, which is what I love. So.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I did not know what plant you were going to choose today. You know, I was kind of curious, like, what is Thomas going to choose? And I will have to say, I was surprised that you chose Motherwort, but very pleased too. So why did Motherwort jump out at you as a plant to talk about today?
Well, let me tell you. And for those of you listening, she doesn't know the answer to this question. I did in China, I did my PhD in what translates as Chinese Materia Medica Studies, which is essentially plant pharmacy, sort of. And what I did was a comparison of the European motherwort, which is Leonoris cariaca, which is the one we commonly use in Western herbal medicine, and Chinese motherwort, which is Leonoris japonicus. And so I did historical, botanical, genetic. Historical being, you know, comparing historical texts, comparison, and chemical comparison of the two species over the course of almost 5 years. Oh. So I'm intimately connected to that plant.
All right.
There's not probably too many people on the planet who know more about those two plants than I do, which is, you know, what happens when you do a PhD. That's, you learn a lot about those things. I did some cultivation stuff, but it didn't get far enough along to really include it in the dissertation. So I have a little book over there that I could show you, but it's all in Chinese. All that you would ever want to know about those two plants, basically.
Wow. So, I'm excited to dive in then. Where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, I one thing I will say for those of you who may be curious, you know, The books you mentioned, you know, using Western herbs and Chinese medicine, this is an idea that for me is about, because when I first started studying herbs, it was all Western herbs. I didn't know anything about Chinese herbal medicine. And then even when I first started with Michael and Christopher, it was still pretty Western herb focused in the beginning. And a lot of the Chinese herb stuff, and it was kind of the way that they approached the teaching at that time, because Christopher kind of went right into botany and materia medica, and Michael did all this theoretical stuff. And so even for that first year or so, it was still very, for me at least, very like Western and native California or West Coast, whatever, Western US herbs. And so when I finally like sort of made the jump to really seriously studying Chinese medicine, I kind of felt like, well, I can't leave all these behind. Like, that's just not going to work for me at all. I have a relationship with these plants. And so I felt like, and, you know, influenced by Michael for sure, and Christopher even, that I really needed to do this. And motherwort is an herb that I wrote about, I think it's in the first book. And at the time, I didn't have the kind of information that I have now. And I may have even said that they're similar or close or whatever, because a lot of their indications are very, very similar. However, what I've come to realize is that with maybe one exception, I would always, always choose motherwort given the choice, which is to say that it does everything that the Chinese one does, specifically related to gynecological indications. And then it has a whole host of other indications for the heart and for mental, emotional issues, etc., which the Chinese one doesn't really have. And I could go on at length about the exception in this situation, but I won't. I will just say the one exception that I did mention at the beginning there was that the Chinese species is used, basically every woman who gives birth in China today and for a very long time has been given motherwort, Chinese motherwort pills or whatever the, you know, format is. So, which is to be taken right after they give birth, like the next day, basically, they start taking those. And so the one thing that motherwort, I think the Chinese one does better than possibly better than the European species is it does help to slow the bleeding without stopping it. And that seems to help in the recovery process. And I don't have enough experience giving them both to be able to make enough, you know, because it's like I've seen it hundreds of times with the Chinese one, because everybody I know is given birth, every patient, every friend, every whatever, like they all have had that. And I've seen what happens. I would never give only a single herb to a patient, you know. So if you know, I used to do a fair bit of gynecology and postpartum work. And I just would never give a single herb. And so it's hard for me to make a judgment about which one is better. Mm-hmm. But the Chinese one definitely is very good for that.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
And you mentioned indications for the heart. What indications do you see with motherwort?
Yeah. So I think the interesting thing about the European motherwort, that's one of the things that really sets it apart from the Chinese motherwort, is it has this whole group of compounds that are very specific for the cardiovascular system, which mostly are improving the elasticity and structure of the vessels. And actually some of them have been shown to improve and strengthen musculature, specifically musculature like the heart. And so these compounds either are absent or are in very, very low amounts in the Chinese species. And a lot of these compounds also have been shown to be good for actually relieving anxiety and similar types of issues. And so I find it to be extremely useful for this sense of like a fullness in the chest when you're anxious, when you like, maybe short of a panic attack. I'm not sure it's going to be your best choice in a panic attack because that's a little bit too strong and acute. But those general sort of like, I'm stressed, I'm taking deep breaths, I'm full, I'm, you know, my mind is going a million different ways, I'm having a hard time sleeping because of that. I can't get anything done because I can't figure out where to focus myself because I just see this long list and I can't just pick one. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that kind of anxiety of being overwhelmed, I find it to be extremely useful for. I usually or often combine it with some other herbs like skullcap maybe, or blue vervain maybe, depending on the situation. I also find it very good for folks that are struggling with withdrawal, or maybe they're past that stage from, you know, getting away from alcohol or drugs. Maybe they're past the initial withdrawal stage, but they're still like, they have a lot of anxiety. They're, you know, they're kind of fried. Mm-hmm. Their nervous system is kind of fried. And I find that motherwort really helps to settle that and calm that. Again, skullcap is a great herb to combine it for that. Maybe some Melissa lemon balm would be very good for that. So, and you know, newsflash, the lemon balm probably is better as like a long decoction for this rather than like the fresh plant tincture, because it's not really the essential oils. It's these other compounds in the plant. So that's something I learned relatively recently, just like within the last maybe 4 or 5 years. And I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. I didn't really realize that, because I was always like, lemon balm, lemon flavor. That's what you want. That's like the best part. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone always says it's a terrible herb to dry because it loses all its flavor. Well, that's true for a tea, but maybe not so true for a medicine.
That's interesting, because lemon balm is aromatic. I've never done a decoction of it, but I do the very long infusions, like the overnight infusions, which mm-hmm. does transform it into this other different being. And so that's interesting, because there's not a lot of aromatic herbs that you really want to decoct or do a long infusion with, but lemon balm is one of the exceptions.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. Now, I think it would be really cool to, you know, maybe do like a, what we call a tincture wash, which you've never heard this term before, but basically like instead of doing a regular tincture, you pour some alcohol over it and kind of literally sort of wash the leaves and pour that off and store that in a jar. And then you make your decoction and add that stuff back, because then you're adding all the most of the aromatics are going to come out in that. It's a quick tincture, basically.
I see.
Because then you get like the flavor of the lemon balm. Because if you decoct it, you're just going to get this bitter whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get any flavor. Or at least you're not that very pleasant lemony flavor of lemon balm.
Right.
And add that back to it, and then you get the flavor. I've never tried that, but it seems like a good idea.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, speaking of bitter, motherwort is a bit bitter.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Do you enjoy long decoctions of teas with your motherwort, or...?
I mostly prefer motherwort as a tincture.
I'm with you.
but I've certainly given it. How much have I taken? I don't take a lot of decoctions. No, that's not true. Actually, I do. It's not true. I do. I do take decoctions, and I sometimes put it in there. But I motherwort's one of those things that I, and maybe it's because of all those years of just focusing so much energy on it, I almost always have a bottle of it on my desk that I just take. Ad lib, I don't know. It seems like a good idea. Hoping those things are going to, like, you know, improve my cardiovascular system. Maybe I'll live a little longer or something. I don't know. Certainly you can put it in a decoction. I think it's perfectly fine. I think it's actually very, very good. And however, those compounds that I was talking to, a bunch of them are actually alcohol soluble mm-hmm. and not very water soluble. And so the tincture actually makes difference. Or you could use it as a draft, which is like grinding the herb to a powder and then pouring boiling water over it. And then you drink the whole thing, like herb and all. Mm-hmm. So that was a very common, you know, sort of more old time way to make herbal formulas. And, you know, you see it in some of the older books, like Salmon talks about it, and these other old guys from the, you know, 16th and 17th century or whatever. And then it sort of fell out of favor. I think, you know, it's not very pleasant to take, but it's also popular in China. So you studied some Chinese medicine. So all the formulas that end in powder or the Chinese san, that's a draft. That means that it's supposed to be ground into a powder. And then usually it's just a couple of grams, 2, 3, 4 grams into a cup, pour boiling water over it, stir it for a little bit, maybe let it sit for 10 or 15 minutes until it's drinkable, and then down the chute everything goes. So then you're kind of getting you're getting all the herb material into your body and then letting your body digest what it can. And I think you get more of those things that are alcohol but not water soluble you're gonna absorb a certain amount. I don't know how much, and there's, to best of my knowledge, there's no research or science to say how much there is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a great method if you can handle the unpleasantness of it. I cannot. And I'm grateful for motherwort tincture because of that. When you make motherwort tincture, do you have a preference for using the fresh aerial parts or dried aerial parts, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters. In fact, I know it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I've done the research. I mean, the difference is minute. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't, yeah, for you and I or anybody out there listening, it's, yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's good to know.
I will say, however, that, you know, the material that most of us get in the store has a lot of stem in it. And the stem is basically inert.
Yeah.
Especially the larger stems. Like if you see a stem and it's kind of, it's like white on the inside or whatever, there's almost no medicine in that.
Mm-hmm.
I would just caution people. I mean, almost everything that's out there to purchase is like that. There are some places that maybe you get better quality, but if you want to make a really good tincture, and unfortunately everything is in this cut and sift format, mm-hmm. that I'm not a big fan of for a bunch of different reasons, but if you can at least pick some of that stuff out, yeah. You're going to get a better quality extract for sure. Yeah.
The only way besides picking out those woody stems that I know about to get around that is getting it from a farmer, because then they'll send you usually like leaf and stem still on, but then you can garble it and get rid of the stem.
That's a great, yeah. If you can order
or grow it yourself, obviously, but.
Right. Or grow it yourself. That's probably the best way, because then you can pick it at exactly the peak moment and process it right then. And that peak moment is when it's blooming, but hasn't completely opened up and there's no seeds yet forming. So that's the peak according to, you know, the chemistry. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So when the flowers, it's like the bottom, you know, it has an inflorescence, right? And it's flowers from the top, from the bottom to the top. And so when it's about halfway up and those flowers are open and these flowers are just falling off, that's the moment.
Okay.
Give or take a little bit, but that's the very, you know, the moment. And yeah, strip all the, you know, the leaves off and discard the stem, compost it, and just use the flowering tops and the very pliable stems, stuff that's not, you know, woody, that's fine. That still has some medicine in it, but that woody stuff, it's mostly just carbon. It's not much of it.
The other tip for people who are doing this themselves, I would add, is gloves, because those the calyx on there are quite prickly.
Yeah, they sure are. Yes. If you don't wear gloves, you'll find out really quickly that they're very prickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That little calyx is pretty stiff with, oh no, I forgot. I think there's six of them. These little spiny, it's very unpleasant to process without gloves. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
You'll quickly realize you should put gloves on if you forget. Yeah.
Well, we've mentioned motherwort for heart indications. I love that the indication story that you gave to us, because I've definitely had days like that. Chest feels full, list is too long, overwhelm. So definitely adding some motherwort to my own desk. So thank you for that. You also mentioned there's some gynecological indications for European motherwort. What are those?
Yeah. So, I mean, sort of generally for PMS, that's very sort of, you know, very, very general. But I like it mostly when there's premenstrual pain associated, especially with breast tenderness and irritability, anxiousness, sleeplessness, any of those kind of, like, you know, heart, spirit, mental, emotional, whatever, however you want to describe that kind of symptoms. I think that's, yeah, cramping, pain, stuff like that. If that's what's going on, then about mid-cycle, you can start taking it. And usually I would use other things, but and take it for that 2 weeks before menstruation comes. And it's not usually, I mean, the way I learned to practice in gynecology is we use two different formulas for before, the 2 weeks before and the 2 weeks after menstruation. We don't generally give herbs during menstruation unless there's a strong reason for it, like excessive bleeding or something like that. And so since it is having this kind of effect to resolve the pain and to resolve these symptoms that have come premenstrually, that's the time to take it. Now, motherwort might be an exception when you could put it in a formula for that other 2 weeks, because that other 2 weeks is usually to try to treat the root causes of the problem, where the 2 weeks prior to the menstruation are more treating the branch to resolve the symptoms so that the person can feel better and you kind of get through that period. And then those next 2 weeks, you're kind of trying to, you know, switch your formula so you're you know, going to the root of the problem. So motherwort may fit in here. I mean, a lot of people say that it builds blood. And so generally speaking, that's a good thing for women. You know, women, if they're menstruating women, they lose blood every month. And so we generally think that it's a good thing to build blood, which is why people call Dangui the, you know, women's ginseng, right? Because it builds blood more than qi, and ginseng builds qi more than blood. I'm not sure that's a very, you know, particularly good way of putting it, but that's how people
generally.
Yeah. So that's kind of, I guess that's, you know, mostly where I would put it. I have used it in some other cases, but I think that's probably the most common place to put it. Yeah.
And this tincture formula that you shared with us, I think you mentioned early to me that was kind of a sample or example formula of what you might do for somebody with those premenstrual symptoms.
Yeah, basically what I just said. I mean, yeah. So the formula is, you know, it's based around motherwort. It has a skull cap, which I don't always include, but usually include, especially if there's more of the mental emotional stuff, especially when there's a lot of like irritability and anger stuff. And then blue vervain, which will be particularly good when there's kind of that stuffiness in the chest that I was mentioning, or breast tenderness or fullness in the rib sides. Like this, people have this, you know, oftentimes women have breast tenderness and then they don't even notice it really because their breasts are so tender, but then they realize that their rib sides, like the sides of their ribs, like outside of their breasts, is also kind of painful. And so the blue vervain really goes well, combines very, very well with the motherwort for that. And then the bitter orange is equally good for that stuff. And in Chinese medicine, we say that it moves qi. And anytime that there's any kind of pain, that means the qi is not moving properly. And although generally speaking, when we talk about premenstrual pain, we talk about pain due to blood stasis, the motherwort's moving blood, as is the blue vervain, and then I use the bitter orange to move qi, and so that like improves that function. It also improves this stuff on the chest that I was talking about and the middle abdomen area. Anytime there's these kinds of qi stagnation, frustration, anger, you know, usually there's a kind of fullness or distension in the chest and abdomen area. So it's also very good for that. And then licorice is added to, you know, in Chinese medicine, we often say, well, it harmonizes the formula. But what does that really mean? That means is in this case, partially it's supporting the middle, supporting the digestive process, supporting the stomach. It's very soothing and nourishing. And so even though those other herbs have some of those qualities, they don't really soothe so much. And, you know, additionally, in Chinese medicine, we say that licorice goes to all 12 channels. And that's part of what they mean when they say it harmonizes the formula, which is to say that it helps the formula to spread around the whole body. So that's kind of why it's in there. And also, you know, it does supplement qi. And so, you know, we're trying to move blood and move qi and all these things. And that takes qi, that takes energy to do that. And so by gently supporting the qi, you're not doing anything too strong, because if you do something too strong, you could make the symptoms worse. But this gentle nourishing will help the body to give it energy in order to be able to do these other things. So that's kind of kind of what we're talking about here. I found it, or, you know, slight modifications of it, to be extremely useful. You know, I almost never give exactly that, only because your assistant was asking me about a name, and I thought, I don't have a name for it. It's just like this base formula that I have in my head that then when I look at the person in front of me, I go, oh, I need to add more of this, or I need to take that out and substitute something else in, or whatever. But it's just this. So I think we gave it a name. So
yeah, maybe the mother workbeast formula.
Yeah. So, you know, and have fun with it. And also recognize that, you know, it's not necessarily perfect for everybody. And, you know, if you have a little more anger and irritability, maybe you add a little bit more skull cap. You know, if you have a little bit stronger, you know, more chest stuff, maybe increase the bitter orange and or blue vervain. That kind of, you know, or substitute something else in. You know, you have some water retention. Well, you know, motherwort does do help that. It is diuretic, but maybe it's not really strong enough in this section, this area. So add some, you know, goldenrod or something to help drain fluid. Hmm. So yeah, but you know, it's I think that's really important to understand that every person is different and there's no one formula or one herb that's going to treat every situation or every person, every situation for one person or certainly every person.
So yeah. I can't call us like the PMS motherwort tincture. Like that's not with
you. You can make it, you can say it's Thomas's, but you can't say the, no. I mean, you can if you want, but it would be inaccurate.
Well, this is a little off topic, Thomas, but I just feel like I have to ask you because somebody out there is like, oh, but I can't have licorice because I have high blood pressure.
Really?
just like handing you the can to open up the worms.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, you can. The issue really is not licorice so much as the amount of licorice and the duration of time. And so if you are taking this formula because of the indications that we just discussed, you're never going to take it for very long. And the amount in the formula is very small. And so I would say in 100% of the circuit, well, or 99.9% of the circumstances, it's perfectly fine. And frankly, like, I don't know how many, but there shouldn't be that many women of menstruating age who are concerned with high blood pressure. If it is, then you have other health issues that need to be addressed, obviously. It's not the high blood pressure or the premenstrual syndrome. It's other stuff that's probably, you know, a bigger problem because high blood pressure is certainly not an illness that should be common in women who I would assume are under 50-ish. Right.
Yeah. So. Well, thanks for that. I have a little story about that. Is someone just this week called me and they're good friends of mine and they live off the grid. Like they don't have any kind of computer or anything. So they asked me to do herb orders from them. And they said, oh, we need like 2 to 3 pounds of licorice. And I said, you know, that's a lot of licorice, like just the cut and sifted herb. They said, oh yeah. You know, one of us is taking a third cup of it every day, like made into a tea. And I was like, whoa, that is not like what you would want to do. And so I shared them that that's a concern. And they're like, oh, well, you know, we're really enjoying it. And I said, the only way I would recommend taking those amounts is if you have a blood pressure cuff with you and that you're like monitoring that. Because some people, you know, even 10 grams a day consistently over a long period of time can, you know, upstart that problem. I've seen people even taking like traditional medicinals, but they're like really going for it. This is not like a couple of tea bags once in a while, but they're like really going for it. It can create that. So, but yeah, and these small amounts, the way that like traditional Chinese medicine uses licorice and these like small amounts to harmonize a formula, not an issue. But unfortunately now it's just kind of, there's this widespread warning that like all use causes high blood pressure. And I have not seen that, but I would caution against like very large dosages for a long period of time.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's even a large dose once shouldn't be an issue. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it every day for weeks or months on end, then yeah, that's certainly going to be an issue. And like you said about the Chinese formulas, like in most cases, most of those formulas you're not going to take for more than a couple of weeks, you know, and there's only like 3 grams or maybe 6 grams maximum of licorice in the formula. And certainly not all Chinese formulas have licorice in them. There's lots that don't. I mean, it's very, very common. It's probably the most common formula found in and formulas.
I've heard that. I was going to ask you if that's true. I think that's like what I remember from my studies. They say that like it's the most used herb in Chinese medicine. That and mint. I think mint is in a lot of them too. Kind of as a similar like kind of harmonizer.
Right. It would be interesting for, I don't know where you put the cutoff because there's so many formulas. There's like thousands. Right. I mean, we only know in the English language, we only know of like whatever 300 or 400 or whatever that are in Bensky. But literally, like I have texts back here that, I mean, I have the set of texts on the, I think it's 10 volumes, and the books are all like this thick from the Ming Dynasty, and it's just all formulas.
So you're saying is if I make the claim that licorice is the most used one, probably no one is going to refute me because nobody is going to actually do the math. Okay.
No. Good to know.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that recipe with us. And for anybody who wants to download the copy, you can get it at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com or the show notes. Was there anything else you'd like to share with us about motherwort?
About motherwort? Well, one thing I would like to say about motherwort, and you know, it's a really pleasant plant to have in the garden. It's, you know, it's a perennial herb. And it lives pretty long time. It doesn't live forever, but it lives for a pretty long time. And so it can be kind of a stalwart in your herb garden. And it's a mint family plant, so it's relatively easy to grow. So for those who are interested in having a little herb garden, it's a great choice for that. It can get kind of large and take up some space. So if you have a very small space, it may not be your best choice. Maybe you want to go to Skullcap or something. But once you've planted it, then you have it every year, and you can harvest. If you're just harvesting medicine for yourself, one plant is probably enough, unless you're using a whole lot of motherwort. And so it's the gift that keeps on giving, I guess. And I find it's a very attractive plant. I mean, a lot of mints aren't terribly attractive. They're kind of small, and the flowers are kind of small. But it being as large as it is, and the multi stems that are all flowering, it's a very attractive garden plant. So I guess that's the thing I'd like to add there, that because I know a lot of people are getting into it, or they're getting into herbs, and they're not really quite sure. Maybe they have a little space, they want to grow some things, and what do I grow? There's, you know, a trillion choices about what to grow. But I think motherwort's a great choice for those reasons. The birds love the seeds, by the way. So if you don't want the seeds, I mean, some are going to fall on the ground. You're going to get new plants coming in. But if you just let it just do its thing and don't cut it down, you'll find birds coming to it to eat the seeds. Huh. And so if you enjoy having birds around, I mean, certainly the butterflies love the flowers, but birds absolutely love the seeds. So it's a great little bird feeder for you.
Lovely. Yeah. Now, I grow it in my garden, but it hasn't thrived, and I'm thinking I need to move it because, it's been struggling a bit. But I think this is the year that it's going to thrive. So I can feel it, Thomas, because you are here.
Yeah. Well, it does. It can be sensitive to pH, and I'm trying to remember exactly. Yeah, it wants. It's not clear in my head right now. I don't want to say anything because I don't remember it quite clearly. But it can be a little bit sensitive to pH. So if your pH is a little bit too high or a little too low, that could make a difference. And it's a very simple fix, you know, to adjust pH with, you know, watering in some, like, you know, if you need to acidify a little bit, you can water in some organic fertilizer for like azaleas and things like that. Right, that's kind of more acidic. You can throw some pine needles around it. If it's the other way around, then you got to do just the opposite. Maybe throw some ash on or something like that. But
my motherwort is underneath a pine tree, so I'm guessing it's the other one.
I think that might, you know, it might be just too acidic for it. And mm-hmm. And maybe it's not getting enough sun. I don't know. It certainly does love the sun. It wants as much sun as you'll give it. It'll take 100%, you know, full sun. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is a beautiful one to have in the garden. It grows so tall. And
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing this loveliness about motherwort and for the formula. And I'm curious, you're recently relocated back to the States, and you have projects going on. I want to hear what's going on in your herbal life.
Yeah, so I moved back. I lived in China for 16 years. And my wife and I moved back to Western Massachusetts this past or last summer. I guess it's been almost a year now, it seems, hard to believe. And in as part of that process, because moving halfway around the world is not enough, I took over the East West Herb School. And so now I am the owner and executive director at the East West Herb School. And we talked about
congratulations, before. By the way. Congrats.
Thank you. So I was honored that Michael offered it, and I am thrilled to be a part of it and continuing legacy. You know, we are on the land here. We're starting an herb farm. I have herb growing projects in several places, including research I'm doing with North Carolina State University. So we're going to have some yield trials this year for some Chinese herbs. I'm very excited. A little bit this year, a little bit next year. So that's been a project that's been going on for about 5 years now. So we're pretty excited about that. We'll continue to do some of that work here in Western Mass. We're going to be growing a bunch of Chinese herbs here. And then the course I'm super excited about. I'm teaching a lot these days. And the first thing I did, or one of the first things I did, aside from building a new website for the course, was to upgrade the home herbalist course. So the East West School of Herbology has two main courses. One is the professional course, and that's the one that you took that we were talking about before. And then about, I'm not sure how long ago, it's been 6 or 8 years now, Leslie and Michael, mostly Leslie, did sort of a intro to herbal medicine kind of course. It's much shorter. It's much less expensive. It's pretty good. And so it's a great intro. And so I did some upgrades on that. I added a lot of video to that. And so that's now on the new website, which I'm pretty excited about, because it offers, for people who are just interested in herbs and want to learn a little bit about how to take care of themselves and their family, but they don't really want to take a super involved, costly, timely herb course, I think it's a nice fit. I think it's an opportunity for folks to be able to do it at their own pace. It's all online. There's a forum people can join and chat with other students that are in it, as well as staff or myself, though that is a little bit limited only because of the course, but nevertheless, it's there. And by the time you get to the end, you know how to make some products, you know, a little bit about some diet therapy, you know, some herbs, how to put them together. It's, you know, you're not going to be an herbalist. You're not going to be a certified herbalist. You're going to have a certificate from us saying you've completed this course. This is not like the Facebook advertising you see where, you know, become a certified herbalist for $35 and the course is like 3 hours long. And I don't know how that gets any means anything, but this is, I think, I guess I should have looked for this before I started this talk, but I'm pretty sure there's about 10 or 12 hours, I forget, I'm sorry, of video course from Leslie and myself.
That's great.
And so, yeah, so it's really, it's fairly involved, along with, maybe there's more like 20, I forget. There's a lot of video anyway. And then in addition to the video for the course, at the end of each lesson, there's like a little mini herb walk. And so, you know, last year we did videos of me at botanical gardens in China or around the property and other places, just with these little, you know, 1 to 3 minute clips talking about specific herbs. So that's kind of, I thought it was a really cool idea to, each lesson sort of finishes like, let's go for an herb walk. And so I think there's 3 herbs at the end of each lesson. So you kind of get the sense of like going out into the field with me and then back to the books, kind of thing, you know? So that I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about the farm. We got this, you know, huge bag of seed starting soil today, and the greenhouse is up and we have too much rain.
Right.
Yeah, way too much rain. Yeah. So Yeah, that's what I'm excited about. And I have a new book coming as soon as I can carve out the time to do it. I translated and annotated the first book on men's health in Chinese medicine. I felt like there's a lot of books on women's health in alternative medicine or herbal medicine. And there's just not really, there's one that I'm aware of on men's health. And it feels like, you know, men get sick too. And you know, I'm not trying to be like, yeah, it just feels like it's an appropriate thing. And frankly, like this guy, like his, he wrote two books, one on women's health and one on men's health. And the gynecology one has already been translated. So I felt like, well, let's do the men's health one too. So
will that be a book like mainly for Chinese practitioners, for a
layperson? Yeah, that one's more of an academic one. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that'd be,
well, congrats on that.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's not published yet, so
I see. Getting closer. Well, Thomas, my sense is, you know, I guess I already kind of knew this, but you really are plant-centric. And that's something like you don't always find that in Chinese medicine. You know, it's like, because Chinese medicine can be, somebody could be really focused on diagnostics, someone could be really focused as a practitioner, but maybe like not directly connected with the plants. And I love that. I mean, your books are all about Materia Medica, your degree is in Materia Medica, and then you're like really excited about your farm. So yeah. I love that you're just kind of pulling all of that together.
When I was teaching in Hawaii, I was doing herb walk with the students. And one of the students was an avid watcher of The Dog Whisperer, a TV show. I don't know, this was whatever, 15 or 20 years ago. And she burst out in the middle of, while I was talking, and like, you know, pointed at me and says, "You're the herb whisperer." And I thought, what are you talking about? I didn't know what the dog whisperer was. Like, I didn't get that at all. And then I was like, oh, wait, I've heard of the horse whisperer. And so I've sort of adopted that. And it's actually the name of my company, both in China and here. And I feel this deep connection to plants. And so when people ask me what I do, I'm always kind of like, I do plants, but I do kind of everything. I love food. I love herbal medicine. I love to garden. I love, you know, if it has to do with plants, I'm into it. Basically, that's it. Yeah.
Well, with all of your years of experience of working with the plants, Thomas, I'm curious what new things or skills that you're currently cultivating with herbs.
Well, I think that would be the agriculture. You know, when I first started, when I was talking about like this path of first starting, there was sort of this time when I was finishing up the program with the American School with Michael and Christopher, and trying to figure out where I was going to go. You know, was I going to go into clinical medicine? I looked at med school, I looked at naturopathic school, acupuncture school, all these different ideas. And something somewhere, I came up with this idea of growing herbs. Right? People don't realize that all the herbs that we use, they're either cultivated on a farm or people are wildcrafting them, right, out of the wild. And we're trying to slow down the purging of the wild resources by improving our cultivation. And so I opted not to do that. And one of the reasons, the time in my head, I thought, well, you know, as I get older, it's going to be harder and harder to be a farmer. So now I'm going to be 55 in June, and I'm a farmer. I don't know how this happened exactly. It's certainly not all that I do. But I think over the last few years, you know, my wife and I had a tragedy about 13 years ago, and that led to the start of a learning garden. And we started this little garden, and that just sort of kind of snowballed over time into a farm, and a, you know, fairly sizable farm of like 18 acres that I managed. And we grew herbs and did a CSA, and we even exported some herbs to here. You might have used some of those herbs here. And then, you know, when I was doing my graduate work, I was surrounded with a bunch of people who were doing that. One of the people from my committee is steeped in that. Most of her work is on understanding how to take herbs out of the wild and bring them under cultivation by understanding the ecology of the herbs where they grow, including soil ecology. And so I got really into that. And I just realized that, you know, if we're going to save the plants and save the ecology of where those plants grow, which is saving ourselves, and if we're going to do that and we're going to use practices that are healthy for the planet and healthy for our children and the next seven generations, then we need people who actually understand how to do this. And that's not to say that other farmers don't know, and only I have the answers. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is that I felt like I had something to contribute. And throughout my entire career, I've sort of gone from, you know, practicing full time, where I was seeing one person at a time and, you know, maybe as many as 15 or 18 people in a day, to teaching more, to writing, to doing research. And each one of those things sort of expands my influence, if you will. And so I guess the agriculture sort of embodies that as well, because now I've done all this research and practical stuff with the agriculture, and that's starting to get out there and affect, you know, more and more people in what I hope is a positive way. So I guess that's what I'm, you know, most excited. I still see patients. I still make medicines. I still wildcraft. I still teach. I still do all those things. I'm the guy that like picks up the textbook and just sits down, you know, with a cup of tea and reads for fun. It's kind of weird, but that's what I do. So that's what I'm really excited about. And I invite folks to come and check us out. And, you know, we'll be having events here for sure. And it's really exciting. We have a beautiful piece of property with open land and forest land. And so, you know, it's going to be like a little botanical sanctuary here and a functioning farm at the same time. So, yeah, it's pretty.
Oh, it's so lovely.
Yeah. Come visit us, Lee.
Yeah. Well, you know, IHS is next year, so maybe.
Ah, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, ooh, yes. Which is the last time we were talking, the last time I saw you was, I think,
2017. That's right. I have your book. Because my wife was like, who's this woman? And I got your book. I was like, it's this woman. Yeah, I went this past year I had just gotten back into the country, and I just went to visit with friends, and it was very pleasant.
Yeah. That's a wonderful gathering.
It really is. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much just for being here, for all of your contributions. It was great to get to know you a bit better and just to really kind of soak in your love of plants and motherwort. So I appreciate you sharing all that you've done here today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. I'm really thrilled that you're doing this, that you're helping to educate folks and get the message out to people about the importance of herbal medicine and, you know, its simplicity also, how you can, with, you know, some pretty simple tools, do a lot of really good things for your health and gain some independence and agency. And that's kind of, you know, a big part of my goal is really to help people gain agency so they can feel a little bit more in control of their lives, you know, instead of constantly going out to try to get other people to tell them what's best for them. Mm-hmm. Specifically in health related stuff.
Right? Yeah. Well, thank you, Thomas.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here. Don't forget to head over to the show notes at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com to download your beautifully illustrated recipe card and get a transcript of this show. There, you'll also be able to sign up for my weekly newsletter, which is the best way to stay in touch with me. You can visit more of Thomas's offerings at www.herb-whisperer.com. If you'd like more herbal episodes to come your way, then one of the best ways to support this podcast is subscribing on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. I deeply believe that this world needs more herbalists and plant-centered folks, and I'm so glad that you're here as part of this herbal community. Also, a big round of thanks to the people all over the world who make this podcast happen week to week. Nicole Paul is the project manager who oversees the whole operation from guest outreach to writing show notes to actually uploading each episode and so many other things I don't even know. She really holds this whole thing together. Francesca is our fabulous video and audio editor. She not only makes listening more pleasant, she also adds beauty to the YouTube videos with plant images and video overlays. Tatiana Rusikova is the botanical illustrator who creates gorgeous plant and recipe illustrations for us. I love them. I know that you do too. Christy edits the recipe cards, and then Jenny creates them as well as the thumbnail images for YouTube. Michelle is the tech wizard behind the scenes, and Karen is our student services coordinator and customer support. For those of you who like to read along, Jennifer is who creates the transcripts each week. Xavier, my handsome French husband, is the cameraman and website IT guy. Thanks to Rising Appalachia for their beautiful song, Resilience. Find more of their music at risingappalachia.com. It takes an herbal village to make it all happen, including you. One of the best ways to retain and fully understand something you've just learned is to share it in your own words. With that in mind, I invite you to share your takeaways with me and the entire Herbs with Rosalie community. You can leave comments on my YouTube channel, on the herbswithrosaliepodcast.com show notes page, or simply hit reply to my Wednesday email. I read every comment that comes in, and I'm excited to hear your herbal thoughts on motherwort. Okay, you've done it. You've lasted to the very end of the show, which means you get a gold star and this herbal tidbit. So for this herbal tidbit, I thought it'd be fun to look at Thomas's book on Western herbs according to traditional Chinese medicine and look at his entry on motherwort. Of course, it's like several pages, so I'm not going to read it all for you. But I thought he had some interesting further suggestions for combinations with motherwort. For example, he mentions combining motherwort with black cohosh for painful menstruation due to qi stagnation and blood vacuity. And you can add cramp bark to the above combination for dysmenorrhea, menstrual cramps. He also recommends it with hawthorn, which is a combination I love as well, motherwort and hawthorn. He also recommends red sage root for palpitations and fearful throbbing in the chest, as well as dizziness, poor memory, and insomnia. Later on, he quotes Culpepper, who says, "There is no better herb to take melancholy vapors from the heart to strengthen it and make a merry, cheerful, blithe soul than this herb." And he goes on to say, "As one can see from these historical sources, motherwort has long been considered an extremely important plant. Today, in an age of high stress, early heart attacks, and exceedingly common menstrual problems, motherwort continues to find its way into numerous prescriptions, whether for gynecological problems, heart troubles, or nervous system disorders." All right, that's it on motherwort. Enjoy.